It's all right. It's all right with me.
Parks and Recreation Commission meeting on September 13th, 2023. Can we all rise for the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Mr. Mendoza, can you please conduct the roll call?
Of course. Commissioner Furia.
Here.
Commissioner Hugh.
Present.
Commissioner Philibosian.
Present.
Commissioner Replico-Purinton is absent. Commissioner Williams.
Here.
Vice Chair Walton.
Present.
And Chair Jenkins is absent.
Thank you. This is the time for any member of the public to speak on an item that is not on the agenda. Mr. Mendoza, do we have any member of the public wishing to speak?
If there is any member of the public wishing to speak on an item that is not on the agenda, please use the raise hand icon and I can call on you shortly. And at the moment, we have no hands raised.
All right, thank you. Moving on to amendments and adjustments. Ms. Plummer, are there any amendments or adjustments to our agenda this evening?
Good evening, Vice Chair Walton. Yes, there is an adjustment to this evening's agenda. On the consent calendar, item A1 will need to be tabled to the next meeting. We do not have a quorum of attendees from that meeting present at tonight's meeting to vote on those minutes, so we will table item A1 from the consent calendar to our next meeting in November.
All right. Thank you for that. Mr. Mendoza, please read the consent items into the record.
Of course, Vice Chair. We have item A1, which will be tabled, which is approval of the July 12, 2023 Parks and Recreation Commission meeting minutes. We have item A2, the Parks and Recreation Manager Project and Program Updates, and item A3, the Director's Report.
Thank you. Do we have any members of the public that would like to speak on any item in the consent calendar?
If there are any members of the public wishing to speak on this item, please use the raise hand icon and I can call on you shortly. Vice Chair, there are no hands raised.
All right. Are there any commissioners who would like to pull an item from the consent calendar? All right. So would any member like to make a motion on the rest of the consent calendar?
Vice Chair Walton, I move to adopt the consent calendar. Items A2 and A3.
Thank you. Is there a second?
A second.
And then Mr. Mendoza?
Yes, and I would like to remind the commissioners to lock in your vote on your little screen. Commissioner Furia?
Yes.
Commissioner Hugh?
Yes.
Commissioner Philibosian? Yes. Commissioner Williams?
Yes.
Vice Chair Walton?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Ms. Plummer, would you like to introduce the next item?
Yes, thank you, Vice Chair Walton. Our next item is a presentation for our Parks and Open Space Division reports. Tonight, Mr. George Thompson, our Parks and Open Space Manager, is here to provide that report. So without further ado, I'll turn it over to Mr. Thompson.
Good evening, Commissioners. I'm the Parks and Open Space Manager for the city. I thought this would be a good opportunity. Usually we do our manager's report on the consent calendar, but unfortunately I wasn't able to make the last commission meeting, so I thought it would do a roundup of all the activities, the projects, programs that we've been working on over the summer in the division. And then, of course, I'm happy to ask any follow-up questions about these initiatives. If we could get the PowerPoint, that'd be great. No problem. Maybe while that's getting loaded up, I'll just begin the preamble on the first slide, which is the city and in particular the Public Works Department, and more specifically the division that I oversee, the Parks and Open Space Division, is in a building out phase. So we are hiring new staff, filling new positions, refilling old positions. And so the city overall is in a phase right now where we're hiring project managers in the engineering division. In the division that I oversee, we have some recently filled vacancies. Some really important staff members have been added over the summer and really in the spring as well. In particular, I think I had mentioned in the last time that I was before the commission that we had hired a Parks and Open Space maintenance supervisor, Andrew Rex, who we got from County Parks. He comes with a wealth of experience in park maintenance and management, and he's been really a key member of our team in the daily operations of all the things that we do. So everything from overseeing the contractor that mows our turf fields, fixes our irrigation, the janitorial contractors that clean our restrooms, as well as overseeing our own internal staff for special projects, and particularly deferred maintenance is a big one. Just recently, we were able to add sorry, this clicker is not working. We could advance the slide, please. So we're able to fill the maintenance supervisor position, and then more recently, we were able to fill one of four key landscape maintenance workers. These are in-house staff that really fill a key role in responding to day of emergencies, as well as provide some contractor oversight. So we hire a suite of contractors to maintain our parks. And essentially those folks do great work, but they do need direction and supervision and quality control. And so that's a key role for our own internal staff. So we were able to get David Chavez, who most recently worked as a temp employee for the City of Santa Barbara Parks Department. Happy to have David join our team. He does bring with him experience working independently and opening and closing parks, maintaining park landscapes. And so he's a welcome addition to our team. We also are in the final stages of the management analyst recruitment. So we've had the first round of interviews and have the final interviews scheduled. This role, management analyst, fills a variety of functions within the division. So they're really a Swiss Army knife type utility player in our team. If you think of about all the things that we do, we've got on one end of the spectrum some really large projects like an update of the Lake Los Carneros Master Plan that fulfills certain roles such as a project planner, public face for the city in moving that effort forward. They're also the team lead for all of the technical consultants that need to be hired for that effort, such as biologists, CEQA specialists, engineers. And so that staff person plays the prime PM or project manager role for that effort. On the other end of the spectrum, we've got things that aren't quite as glamorous or public facing, such as behind the scenes, we do monthly inspections of our playground equipment. And up until more recently, that's been done without the benefit of a real system in place. And so I caveat that with, yes, we have a system in place, but looking to the future, we have some incredible tools at our disposal to make that standardized, to have it accessible to our entire staff, and to create basically a series of controls in that inspection process that conforms with national standards on playground safety. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done on getting that program to where it needs to be. This management analyst staff person will be the lead on, you know, thinking outside the box on how we can take systems and integrate them into our daily practice. Really, the message here is that we're growing in the staff capacity. We're adding new staff members. It's a really exciting time to be in the Parks division in Goleta. And with that added staff, we're able to do things like get on top of the deferred maintenance And so you look at some of the recent accomplishments. If you've enjoyed a group picnic at Stowe Grove in Area 3, you may have noticed that we've totally revamped that picnic site, all with our own in-house staff. So redid the decomposed granite surfacing, revamped all of the picnic tables, rebuilt the trellis overhead. And so those sorts of projects we're able to do in-house, and we can only do it with our own staff. Without these staff, we would have to go through a lengthy contracting process, and it'd be a lot more expensive and time-consuming. We also are able to really plan out our seasonal work throughout the year. So this past year was a great rain year. We're expecting El Nino is going to be another great rain year. Rain for us equals great creek flows, wonderful wildflower shows, but it means a ton of annual grasses growing in our open spaces, and our staff need to be out there mowing them 4, 5, 6, 7 times a year in the spring and early summer to get the risk of wildfire down. And so consider that, you know, that's a considerable amount of staff time that we need to dedicate annually to that. So having more staff means we can get that mowing done and protect the community much better than we were without that staff. Also with El Nino and what we saw this past year, emergency work. We're planning that we're going to have major storm damage this winter. And so in anticipation of that storm event, we can get out into our open spaces and do some work, you know, fixing things that need to be fixed, anticipating that we're going to get those record-breaking rainfalls. I mentioned supervisor and quality control. That is a really a focus over the coming months as we're adding additional staff. Where can we get the best value in all of the contracts that we have let out with private contractors? That's everything from tree trimming to turf mowing, having eyes and ears on the ground, and working closely with those contractors to do things like seasonal fertilization of our turf fields, aerification, making sure that that's happening properly, gopher control, all of those things that yield better results for our community and recreation facilities, that happens at the bottom staff level. You know, the folks that are out daily working in our fields, we translate that into higher quality recreational amenities. And then, of course, we have larger capital projects. My role as the division manager is to interface directly with the public, interface as a project manager for large capital projects like the Elwood Monarch Butterfly Grove, and then interface with our in-house engineering team on teaming up with them and other staff members to make sure that we're delivering these projects in a timely manner. So we're finally able to staff up. I'm becoming less and less involved daily with making sure that restrooms are cleaned and trash is being emptied. I'm able to pass that down now to our supervisor and staff that he's overseeing, and I'm able to focus more on these more public-facing, larger projects. So speaking about some of the systems that we've developed and integrating them into our daily practice, we place a high priority on systems thinking and available technology. So when I was first hired, going through our records, a lot of our records were kept the old way in paper copies. So I mentioned our playground inspection process. That was all done manually through paper forms. And now we're going to integrate that into an electronic system. So we always know where it's filed. We can access it from a smartphone in the field. We can input that inspection through a tablet or your smartphone. And we're able to really look through time at where and how often certain components of our playgrounds fail and be more proactive in either ordering parts, having parts on hand, and basically building that system so that we're not scrambling at the last minute and shutting down playgrounds because we weren't anticipating that that failure was going to happen. You can multiply that across all the things that we do. But this software that we use called Fulcrum, and so we have various apps that we're able to develop within that software. We just happen to be looking at a screenshot of park inventories. So you go into a park, you can see 10 picnic tables, 3 lights, restroom facilities, trash can locations. All of those amenities in that park need to be tracked, scheduled replacement, maintenance schedules. All of that can be integrated into this system, and we're taking full advantage of being able to do all of that from the field with your smartphone. So we're starting to see a lot of benefits from that. One of the things that has been really helpful for park inventory, in particular trash cans, is Marburg does a lot of our trash can servicing. So when we get a call from a member of the public saying, hey, the trash can at the north end of Bella Vista hasn't been emptied apparently, we can look at our inventory, get the number of that trash can off of Fulcrum, and call Marburg and say, hey, trash can number 452 has not been serviced. Please do so. And that's just one example, not calling out Marburg in particular, right, but that's just one example of how we're able to use this technology. Next slide, please. It came into play really well this past storm season, where we had two storm events. I had updated the commission about this item before, and I'll mention it later in this presentation, but we had 250 trees come down or were severely damaged by winter storms. And so just tracking that alone was a monumental effort. And so you're seeing a screenshot of all of those trees here. We're able to recategorize individual trees as they're dealt with by tree contractors, chipped up, pruned, whatever the treatment is, and change the status from, in this case, red, which means it hasn't been addressed, to green. And so that's really important when we're talking about the tree contractor, the bird biologist, the consulting project manager, the contract city arborist, me, and then our field staff in-house. All of us need to know what's going on with that particular tree, when that work is going to be done, when signage needs to go up to close off a certain area of the park, and we're all able to do that by just tapping a couple buttons on the smartphone. It's been really helpful. Next slide, please. We're also able to pull up individual reports from some of those consultants that we hired, and what we're seeing right now is the bird biologist that's helping us address these issues, in particular at Elwood. So you're seeing screenshots from the Fulcrum app where I'm able to pull up pictures of a young great horned owl and know exactly where that was detected, and in turn around to our tree contractor and direct that team to hold off on work until that area has been cleared several weeks, or in some cases months, from the date that that bird was detected. So we're really able to dial in both work scheduling, but also a greater sensitivity to the environments that we're working in, all through the use of this technology. Next slide, please. Okay, so circling back to winter storm damage, we've had approximately 10 to 15 new projects that were unanticipated come into the division, and I've been the lead on some of those projects, but then we also have folks in the engineering division and then a suite of contractors and consultants that are assisting us with these projects. The short of it is that a lot of our previously planned work, we're still trying to get that done, but these projects have taken a much higher priority and a bigger constraint on our time, with additional weekly meetings, coordination of consultants and contractors. But we've been making a lot of good progress. You just saw a glimpse of the tree work that's been done. So we're down to about 50 trees, well, actually in the 40s now, out of those original 250. So we anticipate that we'll be done with that work by October 1. That'll close out that huge effort that we've been working on since January 9th. We've got a couple other projects that are coming online shortly for construction. One of them is critical for emergency service vehicle access and our maintenance vehicle access to Elwood Mesa. We have a damaged storm drain culvert there that was damaged in the January 9th storm. We're still able to cross that with some of our vehicles, but the heavier vehicles were not, so that's restricted our access. That'll be under construction in several weeks. And then some of these projects are going to be multi-year efforts. So we've got the initial effort out the gate to secure the site, make it sure that it's either restricted access to the public because we've got either a really dangerous situation with cliff erosion or stream bank erosion, and so we've fenced those sites. And then now we're working with a team of consultants, design engineers, and landscape architects to design a permanent fix for those sites. So we've got the Ellard Mesa Coastal Trails and beach access, and then also a couple other sites, Stonebridge Open Space, which is just north of Stowe Open Space, and then also several drainage improvements that need to happen at Evergreen Park. I mentioned El Nino prep. We don't know how often we'll get storms or how big those storms are, but our staff are out in the field right now inspecting storm drains that run through our park system, making sure that we're being proactive on doing as much that we can in the coming weeks and months before those storms hit. And then we're also doing, just today we did a post-storm action review to recap all of the January and March storms and really self-assess how well we did, what sorts of recommendations we have coming into the new storm cycle. Next slide, please. Okay, switching gears. We have a adopted creek and watershed management plan, and if you're not familiar with that, it was a multi-year effort. A lot of citizen interest, special interest group involvement. City Council adopted that plan, and the short summary is that that plan is aspirational, it's all-inclusive, it is a vision of what the city might be able to do to restore creek habitat for wildlife, for recreation, for a whole variety of interests. And then there's also a major focus on water quality as well. So there's kind of these two components, water quality and wildlife habitat. I'm the lead on the wildlife habitat portion and creek restoration portion. And so now that the city has adopted it, you know, we're taking this big programmatic plan and basically developing it into actual projects and programs. And so that's where we are right now. We have a technical advisory group that is made up of regulatory agency folks, habitat and creek water quality specialists, some of them retired professors from UCSB. So these are folks that have either academic experience, regulatory experience, or in some cases, hands-on experience doing the work of creek restoration. So this technical advisory committee or group was instrumental in developing the nuts and bolts of the Creek and Watershed Management Plan. So they worked for years, about a year and a half, I believe, on developing the plan and then eventually got it to City Council for adoption. So we're still working with that group in developing individual projects. And then once those projects are drafted, we'll come back out to the public and have, you know, focus meetings on these individual projects and then eventually integrate it into our capital improvement program, which is really the vehicle for our city budgeting process. It's how projects get funded through the city budget process and eventually implemented. So with that, we have several updates. We've got a whole new section of our website, our city website, that addresses creek and watershed issues and the management plan in detail. And then just wanted to put a plug in, at the end of this month, we're celebrating Creek Week. It's a multi-agency celebration of all things creeks along the South Coast. And in particular, we've got things like creek cleanups. I'll be leading a tour of Devereaux Creek on September 28th. In the evening, so if you're interested, you can sign up and RSVP for that. It'll be a really fun walking tour of Devereaux Creek. And just a forewarning, it will be a fast walking tour. We've got a lot of ground to cover. So if you're interested, please look on the website for that information and send me an RSVP. Great. And with that, that's the quick roundup. We've got a a whole bunch of other stuff. Actually, there should be another slide. Sorry. We need to talk about grazing and Elwood. Sorry. Prematurely ended there. If we could go to next slide. Okay. Another major initiative, and we've been doing a lot of work in the last 2 weeks on this. Back in, I believe, June, the City Council was presented with a new high fire ordinance. And basically the gist of that is a larger focus on, for our purposes, a larger focus on no camping enforcement in areas designated as high fire zones within the city. And so off the top of my head, those include areas like Elwood Mesa, Lake Los Carneros, a smattering of smaller open spaces concentrated along Cathedral Oaks, you know, the foothill areas of Goleta. And so these are areas where we have a dense amount of vegetation that is prone to catching on fire, and if left unchecked, would lead to a catastrophic wildfire where there's a high potential for loss of property, or hopefully not, but loss of life. And so we've been trying to find an avenue to compassionately address encampments and camping in our open spaces. So we have a whole arm of our city that's dealing with outreach, education, service provision to folks that are camping in our open spaces. But ultimately, we've got a serious public safety risk where we just cannot bear ignition in these high fire zones. And in particular, this past 2 weeks with the rollout of this new high fire ordinance, we've been very active in addressing camping at Elwood Mesa. This next week, we'll be moving over to Lake Los Carneros. But what that means really is this new ordinance prohibits camping in these high fire zones, period. And so we've got a process in place to deliver services to the folks that we find camping in these areas, but ultimately they're not allowed to stay there. And I just encourage anybody that is listening to report camping, if you see camping in our public open spaces, please call our division and we'll start the process to address those encampments. If you smell smoke or see fire, immediately call 911. We are in the high fire season right now, and this is just a critical issue for us. Next slide, please. Okay, speaking of fire, Elwood Mesa Monarch Butterfly Grove is where I've been spending most of my time getting this project to the starting line. So this past summer, we held several community engagement events. The highlight was a well-attended event at the Natural History Museum. We partnered with them to present kind of the state of the art of what we're doing at Elwood. And that was a rollout of all the research we've done over the last 2 years, a rollout of the plan that we have to improve habitat, reduce fire risk, improve public access and safety. It was really well attended, got a lot of good feedback from folks that attended. We also did a wholesale website update for our Elwood portion of the website. So if you're interested, you can do a deep dive on the permits that are moving forward. We've got a great FAQ on the site now, as well as an overview of all of the things the city's proposing to do at Elwood. I mentioned wildfire risk reduction, and separately we have, in concert with the improvement plan, we have a hazardous fuels reduction program. So by hazardous fuels, I mean dead down, standing dead trees, tall annual grasses, all those things that if they catch on fire would potentially lead to a large catastrophic wildfire that would not only jeopardize the monarch butterfly habitat, but you know, certainly adjacent neighborhoods. So we've put forward this application to the Coastal Commission to allow the city to move into the Butterfly Grove, and in a controlled way, with the benefit of having on-site monitors, the benefit of our 2 years of research on what makes a monarch grove a monarch grove, as well as on-site monitors when work is happening, to be able to address all of those fuel risk. And so when you look at the monarch grove, we're talking about 90 acres of down dead, standing dead eucalyptus trees. How do you go about addressing that fire risk? And so we've put forward a proposal to the Coastal Commission, which is the permitting agency in this case, to allow the city to do that work in a controlled way. We're looking at basically a first phase of 3 years, hopefully starting as soon as November in areas where we don't have monarch butterflies. But this will be initial phase of 3 years, and then we would get onto a regular annual cycle of maintenance out there. So just think of annual mowing along the interface between the public open space and neighbors' backyards, annually going through and doing assessments of how many trees have fallen down, how many trees have died, and being able to get contractors out there almost immediately to address those. So it's really a new chapter for the city in the management of the grove. I know that it's been a long process and appreciate everybody's patience while we get the necessary permits in place. While those permits are being processed, and eventually we'll have a hearing date with the Coastal Commission, on the back end, we're working with County Fire. They're going to be a major workforce for us, tree contractors, private contractors, and then, of course, our consultant team, putting all of those processes and steps in place to make sure that when we hit the starting line, we've got our roles and logistics all worked out. So we actually spent 9 hours in the field yesterday at Elwood reviewing each of our treatment zones, looking at cases, you know, what would we do in this case in the Butterfly Grove, which trees would we propose removing, how would we do that. Our butterfly specialists were there, you know, advising us on, you know what, it's going to be several years until our planted trees get to a certain size. We want to leave this backside of the main grove intact, so don't remove as much dead vegetation there because it provides great wind blocking potential until those new trees grow in. So those sorts of logistics is what we're working out right now. And once the permits get issued, we'll be ready to go. We don't want to wait until, you know, the 11th hour to really figure out all of those details on the ground. And again, when you're talking about a 90-acre site with complex topography, different types of vegetation types, we're going with a surgical touch, not just a broad brush chainsaw approach. And so that surgical touch really requires a lot of coordination amongst our team. And then lastly, the public outreach component. So we've got a couple different things that are happening. We've updated the website. We're going to be hosting a new effort for the community, the Elwood Neighborhoods community, in October that really sets the table for what private homeowners and collectively neighborhoods can do to reduce the risk of wildfire on their properties. And so there's this great program, a national program, where you can get certification as a neighborhood, as a fire-safe community. And that goes a long way to making sure that your property is insurable. And so that's one of the things we're going to be rolling out. You know, the city's doing its part. What can you as a private homeowner, renter, property owner do to reduce fire risk? Okay, so that's the fire risk component. We also have, as I mentioned, the improvement plan. So we've got habitat improvement, proposing to plant over 1,000 new eucalyptus, native trees as well, 100,000 native plants for nectar and other wildlife support, a footbridge, public access improvements, and hard improvements like a new culvert at the Devereaux Creek Crossing. All of that's being packaged up into a development plan and a coastal development plan permit application that will be presented to City Council next month. So right now, we're really nose to the grindstone to get that package delivered to City Council. City Council, their role, since we don't have a local coastal plan, their role is to approve a coastal development permit application that then goes up to the state, and ultimately the Coastal Commission makes the call on issuing the coastal development permit that authorizes all of these improvements. We anticipate October city council meeting. 6 months out from that, we bid at city council, and then construction would begin next summer on all of those other improvements. So in the meantime, again, rolling out additional information for the community on the wildfire risk efforts. But as we get closer to the October date, you'll be seeing a lot more information out to the community on this important date for this project. And then in the ensuing months between October and the Coastal Commission date, we'll have walking tours, really continuing that effort to keep the community engaged and, again, an avenue for them to provide additional input on the project. But anticipate that major work is going to happen 2024-25 on all of those improvements. Okay, switching back to Lake Los Carneros. We had a wonderful evening event last week at the Stowe House, and it was run by the Santa Barbara Trails Council on a proposed project to basically complete a circumnavigation trail of the lake. So you may recall that the footbridge at Lake Los Carneros has been closed for several years due to structural deficiencies. Basically, the posts that hold it up have rotted. That entire bridge needs to be demolished, removed, and then start the process of developing a design and public engagement process to design and hopefully construct a new bridge. In the meantime, the Santa Barbara Trails Council was able to get a grant from the Santa Barbara Foundation to construct a 700-foot-long trail segment that would basically complete the loop around the trail that previously that footbridge provided. We got some good input at that community meeting, and so the next step is to get permits for that trail construction and hopefully implement it. I think it'll be a really valuable portion of the trail system at Lake Los Carneros. I just want to add that the Trails Council has been a wonderful partner in this. They've really taken the lead. I don't take any credit from all the work that they've done, everything from bringing in trail construction specialists to advise on the trail alignment to hiring a biological consulting firm to do a wildlife impact study and document the types of vegetation that trail would go through. They've really been very proactive on getting this project done, and appreciate their efforts. Next slide, please. Okay, I think we're nearing the end, if not the last slide. Another initiative that we have going is the South Coast Herbivory Project, which is another way of saying we want to get livestock onto our open spaces to reduce the risk of wildfire, encourage reintroduction of native plants, and overall use another tool in our toolbox on managing our open spaces, so additional level of stewardship. This is a partnership with the Fire Safe Council and Santa Barbara County Fire. We've seen other jurisdictions and private parks like Ealing's, City of Santa Barbara Parks and County Parks use livestock, in particular goats and sheep, to a great benefit to try to graze and basically eat annual weeds down to a level where if a wildfire does come into those areas, they don't spread like wildfire. And just from the public component, we've seen a lot of community members from other areas of the South Coast really interact well with that sort of effort. I do want to mention, though, that the key to this being successful is timing. So not having sheep or goats out on the landscape too long to the point where they have negative effects on the landscape, so things like erosion or eating plants that we don't want to get browsed all the way down to the ground, things like native shrubs. Timing is, of course, really important when we talk about areas like wetlands. And just a quick aside about wetlands, we have a very unique type of wetland at Elwood Mesa called Vernal Pool basically fills up with winter rainfall. It doesn't have a stream inlet into it. It's basically direct rainfall into this small depression. There's a clay layer underneath that keeps that water at the surface. It'll basically be a pool for the winter months, and then eventually it dries out into the late spring and summer. That wetting and drying annually creates a very unique ecosystem with only specialized types of plants, native plants that are vernal pool specific, and animals that are unique to those vernal pools. If you've ever had sea monkeys as a kid, those are a type essentially of vernal pool species. So you get this dry packet poured in a little plastic aquarium, and voila, you get these magical little creatures. Same thing happens in vernal pools. What we've seen at Elwood Mesa is through the drought, we have these annual grasses that are able to invade into the bottom of the vernal pool because it's not filled up with water. And so you go out to Elwood now, and it's a mix of invasive annual grasses, primarily from Europe and other Mediterranean areas, and the native grasses and native fauna that are in our vernal pools basically get pushed out by those annual grasses. And so there's a lot of research that's coming from primarily UC Davis, where livestock grazing is actually a key tool to use to promote native diversity in our vernal pool ecosystems. So grazing isn't always bad in wetlands. So there is an upcoming community meeting at 6 p.m. September 20th at the Direct Relief International building that will be focused on the South Coast Herbivory Project. I encourage all of you to attend, or anybody that's listening at home to attend. This is a multi-jurisdictional effort across private public lands across the South Coast of Santa Barbara County. We're lucky to be part of that effort. And so it's an emerging tool that we're able to use as land managers, and pretty exciting to be a part of. And hopefully in the near future, we're able to get livestock out to places like the northeastern corner of Lake Los Carneros, where you walk out there now and it's 6 foot tall, dry radish and mustard. Whereas typically in a native ecosystem, it would be a sea of perennial bunch grasses, purple needle grass, and all of those interesting wildflowers in between those bunch grasses. So that's the type of conversion that we would hope would happen through the use of grazing and active restoration in that area. All right. Last one. We have a really fun event coming up on Saturday at Stowe Grove Park. We are hosting a community tree planting event. We're going to be putting in 75 coast redwoods and 25 incense cedars, and we're welcoming everybody to that event. Doesn't matter your experience level, your skill level, your age, your physical ability, we'll have something for you to do at that event to help us regenerate the grove. So 2 years ago, we did basically the first phase of this project, which was to remove about 40 dead redwoods that had died through either pest infestations, or really the main cause was the drought. And in the ensuing years, we upgraded the irrigation systems, put a bigger emphasis on using mulch, wood chips to retain soil moisture. And now here's the final part, which is replanting trees that died, and then also infilling a lot of those spaces that never had redwoods. So, of course, we're looking at the Stowe Grove Master Plan and making sure that we're not planting trees where we have planned recreational amenities or other landscapes proposed under the Master Plan. And so the other component of this, I'll just mention, and this will be a focus on Saturday, is you see 25 incense cedars. So those are not redwoods. That's a whole different species of tree. From a distance, they look like redwoods. And the great thing about incense cedars is that they grow about the same size as redwoods. Standing from the parking lot, looking out of the grove, you may not notice that they're not redwoods, but they require a lot less water. And so for the city, this is just one strategy for us to adapt to a hotter, drier climate in the future and reduce our annual water bill as well. So I invite you to come out. It should be a great event. We'll have snacks, drinks available. Bring some gloves if you want to. And then we'll have all the tools and instruction available there. We've got about 50 people RSVP'd. So two per tree, but we could definitely use some more hands to help. The soil's pretty tough there. So we'll spend quite a bit of time digging those holes at the beginning of the event and then get those trees in. So thank you.
Thank you. That was wonderful. Mr. Mendoza, are there any members of the public who would like to make a comment at this time?
If there are any members of the public wishing to speak on this item, please use the raise hand icon and I can call on you shortly. Vice Chair, there are no hands raised.
Okay, thank you. And my fellow commissioners, would any of you like to make a comment on the presentation? I see a few. I'll begin with the first one. Commissioner Williams, please.
Thank you so much, Mr. Thompson, for that excellent and comprehensive presentation. Greatly appreciated. Just a couple follow-up questions. Appreciate your reviewing the status of your staffing. How many open positions remain?
Commissioner Williams, we have one vacant position right now, which is the management analyst. That's that utility player in our staff that would do a variety of project management and systems updates. So just that one vacancy right now.
And how, now that you're nearing your current staff limit, how are you feeling about the adequacy of that staffing level? Do you think it's going to be adequate? Do you envision that you really do need more staff positions to do the tremendous amount of work that you have?
You know, the response to that, part of my role as division manager is to advise folks above me on, you know, what is the right staffing level. And ultimately, it's the city manager's decision to make that recommendation to the city council. So I'll speak more to the types of work that we have before us. So one key element is the Creek and Watershed Management Program. Within that program, we're developing anywhere from, I'd say conservatively, 40 to 60 new projects that would come out of the adopted Creek and Watershed Management Program. At any given time, a capital project manager can really only manage 3 to 4 projects at a time as an individual. And so, you know, part of that response that I'm giving you is we've adopted plans and policies at the city council level that have created a workload that is aspirational. But if we really are meaning to make inroads on things like the Creek and Watershed Management Plan, we would need more staff to really see progress on that. A whole nother component I mentioned in our staff report is our urban forestry program. We don't have a dedicated forestry division, and so we are looking at multiple divisions within the city managing things like the street tree maintenance program. Within parks and open space, we've got over 6,000, somewhere between 6,000 and 10,000 trees, publicly owned trees that we own and do limited maintenance on. And so we are proposing to hire multiple tree contractors in the coming months to start a whole new initiative in the park and open space program, which is focused on tree management. So the short answer is there's a lot more work that needs to be done. And with this new hire, we're not expecting that all of that work is going to be done by this one individual.
Right. Speaking of work to be done, really looking forward to the initiation of the Lake Los Conejos Master Plan. What is the latest time frame for that critically important effort?
The schedule and timeline for getting that new project rolled out is really dependent on two primary things: budget. And if you followed the budget process this past year at the City Council, the city is facing some major projects outside of my division, you know, street improvement projects. And so if we're realistic about moving that project forward on a timely manner, we will be looking for external grant opportunities. I think some funding would hopefully be allocated by City Council to start the initial efforts on the master plan update. But in the meantime, the Public Works Department alone has some major outstanding capital projects that are short on funding. The other component on moving that project forward is who we end up hiring. I would love to be able to step in and be the lead on that project, but part of my role as manager is to have staff that can lead efforts beyond just me as an individual. That's how we collectively get more work done. So depending on the person that's hired, their experience, their capabilities, their ability to adapt to working at the City of Goleta and all of our processes and procedures, and their ability to interface with the public, that's going to determine the ultimate timeline if we have budget. So that's a long-winded way of saying I don't know exactly when that project's going to come online. It is a priority for our division, but it depends really on budget and who's going to be the lead in the driver's seat on that project management role.
It's a long time in coming. We were so close a few years ago to initiating that, and as you well know, and I don't know if all the commissioners know, the master plan at Lake Los Caneros, City of Goleta has never done a master plan at Lake Los Caneros, which is one of our most iconic public spaces, and so important to the community and has such important values, not only recreationally, but also as habitat. And the City of Goleta in its 20 years history has never done a master plan. We inherited an old master plan from the county, and 20 years has transpired without this city doing a master plan. And we've talked about a master plan in the 4 or 5 years I've been on this commission, and it is heartbreaking that there's nothing in the foreseeable future. It's heartbreaking. And so just felt it was necessary to express that, because we've been promised again and again, oh, very soon, very soon, very soon. But it has not been initiated. It's heartbreaking.
Commissioner Williams, if I could add maybe one more thing, that I'm not saying this to allay your concerns and displeasure that the master plan hasn't moved forward yet, but in lieu of a master plan moving forward in earnest, you know, looking at what we've done at Elwood Mesa, it's kind of like an onion. Once you get into the master plan development process, you keep peeling back these layers, whether it's accessibility, wetland restrictions at Lake Los Carneros in particular. The dam itself is a standalone capital project. You know, defining what restoration means, habitat restoration means at Lake Los Carneros, the trail system, the interface with the Stowe House, the historic designation of the Stowe House and the grounds and the railroad museum, parking, fire risk, all of those things. In lieu of, because we know it's going to be a multi-year effort, I just want to put a little bit more confidence in the fact that we will be doing other things on the ground now that we have additional staff. And by other things, I mean like rolling out a trail maintenance system so that we're not waiting for the adoption of a master plan before we can get out there and improve our trail system. Looking at the dam and completing an emergency action plan and having some plan in place to improve the dam itself. This past summer, you also saw a repaving of the main road that goes through Lake Los Carneros. So there are things that we will be doing in the meantime until we can start that master plan process. So just want to give you hopefully a little bit of confidence that we're not sitting on our hands and waiting for the master plan process to start. We're actively looking at ways to improve Lake Los Carneros within, you know, some reasonable boundaries and expectations of what can happen there in the short term.
Thank you.
The grazing component is another aspect of things that we'll be doing at Lake Los Carneros in the meantime.
Which I think we all hope is well managed, because we know grazing that is not well managed can be very detrimental. And that is worrisome. I have a few more questions, but I know other commissioners
would you
probably
like to finish?
Have questions.
And then, well, we do, but would you care to go ahead and finish?
That's very, fine. I'll be happy to. One thing I had the opportunity to do over the last many months is go visit other monarch butterfly areas like Pacific Grove. And I don't know if the other commissioners have had a chance or staff has had a chance to visit other areas, but in visiting the other primary monarch grove areas, you come to appreciate how special Elwood Mesa is. It is bigger. It is more beautiful. It is an unbelievable asset. So I just wanted to note that and then ask one question. You said that really the on-the-ground work is going to be in 2024, 2025. Will the public see any change in this upcoming monarch season on the ground at Elwood Mesa? Or are we just, and it's fine if the answer is no, but just curious because the public we know has been chomping at the bit to see on the ground modifications. And I, for one, like many, to say this is a slow process. We have a lot of, you know, hurdles to clear and, you know, other things to address. But just so we can answer when asked that question, will there be any modifications on the ground this monarch season?
We hope to make modifications before the monarch season. And modifications, I mean some very focused efforts to reduce the risk of tree failures at the main viewing site. So when we were out there yesterday with our science team, there's a couple trees that are looming over the visitor viewing area and over our arguably some of the most important eucalyptus trees in the state for monarchs. So there's, when monarchs come here, they tend to go to the same trees when storms come in because those are the ones that are the perfect mix of light, wind protection. So we've got several trees at the main viewing area, Elwood Main, and we want to protect those. We want to protect the public. And so we're scrambling right now to get some work done there in the next 2 weeks. And it's hot off the press. This is something that we're working on actively today. We don't know if we're going to be able to pull it off. It depends on contractors, depends on Coastal Commission, it depends on emergency permits. But that's our hope, that we're able to get that done before the monarchs come. We're also exploring just some simple housekeeping. So pulling the weeds at the main viewing area, mulching trails, getting the rope delineator back up, you know, simple stuff that hopefully we don't need a permit to complete. I think hopefully common sense prevails in this situation where, you know, we're cognizant of all the potential impacts to the monarch grove after spending the last 2 years studying it intensely. And so that's our hope. That's in the near term, I mean, like in the next 2 weeks. If we get to the Coastal Commission in November with our hazard fuels reduction program waiver, our permit waiver, that would tentatively be on the November Coastal Commission agenda. The next week, we would be out in the grove in areas where we are not impacting butterflies. So that would be roughly 300 feet or more away from active cluster areas. We would roll out with our defensible space mowing program. We'd start chipping and felling dead trees, primarily in that area closer to the public parking lot. Again, all contingent on our trained experts being out in the grove, detecting where we have cluster butterflies, and then setting up a buffer perimeter around that and watching the butterflies while we're doing work 300 feet or more away. And if there's any detection of impact, we stop, we relocate. So that would be the biggest change on the ground. And that's what everybody has been clamoring for, whether it's the neighbors, through the development of the management plan, a huge focus on fire risk reduction. And so that's what we hope to start in November.
My last more comment, I think, than question is...
Sorry, Commissioner Williams, one more thing.
Oh, yes, please.
We also have things that are happening behind the scenes. So we have 1,000 trees being grown up at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo by students in the plant sciences field. And so there are things that are in motion that the general public that are watching this project don't know about. We've got native plants that are being grown out at nurseries. All of that needs to happen in order for us to move into construction and project implementation in 2024. So I know that a lot of the folks that I'm interfacing with in the community want to know when work is going to start on the ground. And so I just want to highlight that work has started. It's just a lot of that work needs to happen behind the scenes. You can't show up the day of and, you know, oh yeah, we got to grow 100,000 native plants. We got to grow 1,000 trees and have them ready. So
that's wonderful. And that was mentioned at the Natural History Museum event, which was indeed fabulous, the Monarch event at the Natural History Museum. So thank you for hosting that. And that is an important addition to your comments. Last thing, I just want to also extend my appreciation to the Trails Council. It was several years ago when the bridge was going to be closed that we talked at the commission meeting about a loop trail. And I think you expressed some incredulity at that time, and which was understandable. But having been out there myself, I understood that seemed to make sense. So the fact that the Trail Council took that and ran with it will be a huge addition and help address the whether we ever rebuild the bridge or not. If there is a loop trail, that will make a huge difference in terms of the you know, recreational aspects and the community engagement with Lake Los Canarios. So kudos to the Trails Council. Kudos for everything you're doing to work with them so productively, and that will be a big asset to Lake Los Canarios. So that's most exciting. Thank you again, Mr. Thompson. I think we're always so impressed when either you or Ms. Plummer remind us of everything that you're doing for the community and what a huge portfolio you have and what progress you're making on it. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner Williams. And next up we have Commissioner Furia.
Hi. Mr. Thompson, I just want to congratulate you. I was so excited reading the packet ahead of time and then just listening to you again. I just have this little notepad and it's just back in front full of things I'm excited about from your presentation. I'm really excited that you all have adopted some new technology and can't wait to hear what how that will help aid all of your efforts. It looks like it's already been very helpful. So that's amazing. I'm excited about goats and sheep at Lake Los Granares. I can't wait to see them. And walking on the new trail, the new paved path, in order to see them, that's going to be very exciting. And then adding the path. Anyway, everything is very exciting. I also really wanted to say I appreciate so much your compassionate approach to the encampment and fire mitigation. It's two very big issues in our community, homelessness and helping those folks who are experiencing that, and also trying to prevent fires at the same time. So it sounds like you all are doing an amazing job of balancing those two seemingly conflicting desires. So I just want to congratulate you on all the great work. Very excited about this presentation. Thanks.
Thank you. And as this was a presentation, there's no need for us to take any action right now. No vote is required. So we can move on to the next item. Ms. Plummer, can you please introduce the next item?
Yes, thank you, Vice Chair Walton. So our only discussion action item tonight is to talk about 2024 and the selection of our dates. The staff report outlines the recommendation of keeping consistent dates for the members of the commission as well as for members of our public so they know when to count on seeing us and when they can come in and talk to us about their concerns or issues. So that consistency, we shifted last year to
the odd months of the year, moving to the second Wednesday of those odd months, since the first Wednesday is for January is usually a holiday week. So that would put us at the second Wednesday in January, March, May, July, September, and November. This also allows us to miss some major holidays throughout this schedule as well, which we were finding conflicts before with fiesta, graduation, some of our more practiced Jewish holidays. And so this one avoids as many holidays as I could try to avoid, and is staying consistent with how we have participated in meetings in 2023. With that, I also am recommending that we maintain the same time frame of 6 p.m. It seems to work well for many. However, the commission, I'm seeking any input if there's any recommendations or changes or suggestions. And then if there are not, then I would be looking for approval of the recommendation for the calendar that's in the staff report as well as the time. And I think Mr. Valdez has something to say.
Yeah, I was just going to share it briefly. excuse me. That we're more than happy to maintain the 6 o'clock start time. Sometimes what can be a bit confusing is our city council will meet at 5:30. We really haven't had too much of an issue with that historically, but just wanted to bring that up so that the commission was aware of that and may want to consider that as part of your decision making this evening.
Commissioner Ferrier, did you have something to say?
Just one small point of clarification. Right now, you have listed Wednesday, July 9th, and I believe actually the 10th is the Wednesday in July.
Thank you for that.
You are correct. Thank you for that.
And Mr. Mendoza, are there any members of the public who would like to comment on this?
If there are any members of the public wishing to speak on this item, please use the raise hand icon and I can call on you shortly. Vice Chair, there are no hands raised.
Okay. And any other members of the commission who would like to comment? Okay. Would a member of the commission like to make a motion? I see Commissioner Williams.
I move we adopt.
Is there a second?
I'll second that motion.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Walton, before we take a vote, could we consider an amendment to include the correction pointed out by Commissioner Furia?
Yes, thank you for that.
Yes, that's understood. Thank you.
So when you're ready, Mr. Mendoza.
Commissioner Furia?
Yes.
Commissioner Hugh?
Yes.
Commissioner Philibosian?
Yes.
Commissioner Williams?
Yes.
Vice Chair Walton?
Yes.
Let's see. Motion passes.
All right. Thank you so much. Now it's time for commissioner comments. It's a chance for commissioners to make a comment or share any information. Staff may not be able to respond to the questions, but because the items are not agendized, but now would be the time. Any commissioners have anything to add? Oh, yes, go ahead, Commissioner Fiora. I'm sorry, I didn't see you.
No worries. Thanks. We had talked a couple of meetings ago, I can't actually remember which one, about a potential for a new online reservation system for our parks, for our various reservable spaces. And I was wondering if I could request an update on that in an upcoming meeting, either in November or January, depending on how it looks for you all. Specifically, I'd love to hear about the progress towards that technology. If there have been any changes to the fee structure, I think there might be some changes that have been happening. And we had talked also about expanding to some additional rental spaces. So I would love an update on that whenever we get a chance. Please and thank you.
Absolutely, Commissioner Furia. We can go ahead and have that either included in the consent item report, or if there's enough active information happening in a decision opportunity, we can include a discussion action item.
Okay. Excellent, thanks.
If no other commissioners have comments, I do have a few announcements to read. We would like to remind the public that we are still looking for volunteers to assist with the planting of 100 trees this Saturday, 9 a.m. at Stowe Grove Park. Also, as a reminder, September 23rd is the beginning of Creek Week. For a full listing of activities, please visit sbcreekweek.com. Please mark your calendars for the 30th Annual Lemon Festival on Saturday, September 30th, and Sunday, October 1st at Gersh Park. And lastly, the next Parks and Recreation Commission meeting will be on Wednesday, November 8th, 2023. And with that, our meeting is adjourned. Thank you so much.